Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How are you tonight? You okay? Huh? Good. Glad to hear it. Thanks for tuning in. Have you had about enough of hello, Dr. Freud. Have you had about enough of John McCain? Huh? Oh, my God, this guy is an irritation. He, you know, if he had any, well, all right, if he were a living human being, there might be some humor here. But I don't know. He reminds me of someone out of a George Romero movie. The Night of the Living Dead, you know, that kind of stuff. Have you heard about what Attorney General Michael Mukasey is demanding? Now, remember, Mukasey was sponsored by Democrat from New York, senior Democratic senator from New York, Chuck Schumer, right? And then all the Democrats got on board with this guy. Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We want Michael Mukasey. He's a hell of a lot better than Alberto Gonzalez. So he got confirmed. And of course, there were a number of people in the left blogosphere, and on a couple of liberal radio programs, screaming, no, don't do it again. Oh, for criminy's sakes, don't do it again, Democratic senators. Don't let this guy. Oh, you did it again. Well, they really did it again. Have you heard? Attorney General Michael Mukasey is now demanding that Congress issues a new open-ended declaration of war. Now, the war, a declaration of war would not be directed at any particular country right now. It's just a declaration of war, which would make the entire globe, including the United States, a battlefield if this president or the next one or the one after that ever decides to feel froggy and wants to jump with some sort of permission from Congress. Oh, my God. Sounds like something out of The Onion, doesn't it? However, given this Republican, for a number of years, Republican-dominated Congress, and now the Democratic, Democratic-dominated Congress, and given their record, both Democrats and Republicans, this is not anything to be laughed at. It really isn't. Mukasey also wants this because the legislation apparently that he's asking for also includes a cover-up of the Bush crime family's systemic torture and abuse of detainees. This is how bad it's gotten. It really has gotten bad. It's gotten so bad. Now, if you remember, the Supreme Court recently ruled that detainees held at Guantanamo have a right to challenge their detention through habeas corpus, the rather ancient freedom that protects people from being thrown in prison illegally with no help, no end in sight, no due process, nobody to come to their rescue. And, of course, that's what the Bush crime family decided to do to people, anybody, American citizens, not American citizens, anybody. You know, we can do this. We can do this. So the Supreme Court said, nah, no, you can't. No, you can't. Not until you completely get rid of a couple of more amendments to the U.S. Constitution. And then you can. But not right now. Now, habeas proceedings would allow some of these people that have been picked up, the goat herders and cab drivers and push cart pushers that have been swept up or turned over for ransom or for payoffs by shadowy Taliban members over in Afghanistan who say, hey, guess what I've got for you? Man, this guy is a Taliban. You know, the Taliban is saying that. This guy is a Taliban. Not me. Well, what do I look like? No. I make bricks. I'm you know, I smash mud together and make bricks. But this guy, look at it. Hey, give me the money. I'm going to buy a new brick kiln. And this is, of course, you know, then when the Taliban guy gets some money, yeah, he buys a new brick kiln and then uses it to make bullets so he can shoot the Americans and the other NATO people who are in his country for no apparent reason to him. But anyway, habeas corpus would allow these detainees to bring up the fact that the evidence against them came from the guy who says he's going to build bricks or make bricks. I guess you don't build bricks, you make bricks. Or, you know, some opium-growing farmer who is protected by the Taliban. Or perhaps a testimony against him that is provided when someone is tortured, you know, when they are hung upside down and have to watch while their child's eyes are gouged out. Or other kinds of abuse, you know, that kind of testimony. So habeas corpus allows detainees to say, wait a minute, this evidence you have against me is bogus, it doesn't make any sense, let me out of here. Now, courts could also release people who are detained indefinitely without charge. That's another function of habeas corpus. Attorney General Michael Mukasey, Senator Chuck Schumer's favorite judge, or whatever the hell he was, wants to make sure neither of these things happen, that it will become impossible to use habeas corpus, and it will become impossible to release people from prison who have been held indefinitely with no charges. This is what Michael Mukasey wants. This is the guy the Democrats confirmed. This is our attorney general. Mukasey, therefore, is asking the Democrats in Congress, and they will do this, you watch, this is going to happen, to expand and extend the war on terror forever. So that anyone whom this president, or the next one, or the one after that, anyone who is declared to be an enemy combatant, which is an undefinable term, an enemy combatant, could then be held indefinitely without a trial. Now, at the same time that the House Judiciary Committee is, investigating, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, whether or not Bush crime family officials may have committed torture and other abuses, you know, Mukasey should know better than to ask Congress to give him the power to detain people without a trial and to hide torture from the courts. But Mukasey does know better. Mukasey understands, doesn't he? Huh? Chuck Schumer brought this guy. Chuck Schumer. Hey, look what I have. I have our next attorney general. He is really a good man. So once again, notify your or not your member of Congress and say no. Don't let this happen. Don't let this happen. Or don't. I mean, it's kind of immaterial. That's the point. I hate to say this, but I'm getting rapidly to that point. I still mentioned on this program the necessity, perhaps, to notify. Hey, let your Congress member know quickly that you want full coverage, not just 2 hours this Friday, or is it tomorrow on the impeachment thing? No. We, and a lot of people still do it, and I still do it, and I still sign the online petitions, and you know, I send emails to Hank Johnson, who's my member of Congress, and you know, blah 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 blah. But I don't know. To exhort you to do that is maybe a little bit silly. You know, maybe it is. But there you go. An open-ended declaration of war against everybody, I guess. You know, just an open-ended declaration of war. Because, you know, after all, it's a global war on terror, and, you know, we have to win, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy on NOVAM Radio.
Great comfort in knowing that they don't know what they're talking about, because history takes a long time for it to reach, and there's no such thing as short-term history.
There's short-term loans or short-term, binge drinking, or but short-term history? What the hell's that? Woo-hoo. What a dork. But I'll tell you what, even though he has caused murder, mayhem, chaos, torture, ripping to pieces of the Constitution, and on and on and on, wait until, of course this will never happen, there would have been a McCain presidency. Huh? All of the above, same stuff, only McCain would have stood there. Well, my friends, you know, I don't know what Senator Barack Obama is talking about where it concerns... what was it he was talking about? Somebody got some notes. Our military affairs correspondent sent me this email today, and she's a little bit upset, so I'm going to share it with you. She writes, Mike, wouldn't you just know it? I go on vacation the first week of July, and all hell breaks loose while I'm gone. Yeah, sometimes it works that way, Sharon. Wes Clark brings the entire so-called mainstream media and the right-wing spin machine down on his head. Monday night, June 30th, my parents and I watched Overman and found out about the hullabaloo over what Clark said on Face the Nation. Then we watched Dan Abrams interview General Clark. We thought that what Clark said was right on and that he had defended himself well. But when I got back to Atlanta the following Saturday and got online, I found that there's been a big political row over what Clark said. His words were distorted, misinterpreted, taken out of context, and it wasn't just right-wingers attacking him. It was Democrats and liberals also. Clark said, quote, I don't think riding in a fighter plane and getting shot down is a qualification to be president, end quote. Now, how can anyone argue with that, Mike? That's like saying water is wet. My dad said the same damn thing about George Herbert Walker Bush when he was running for president in the late 80s. If what Clark said is wrong, is the opposite true? Does getting shot down in a plane qualify a person to be president? It's like people don't understand English anymore. Clark was not swift-boating McCain. If McCain is running on his military record, which he is, shouldn't we be able to legitimately examine that record? Shouldn't a man who served his country for 38 years, who has shed his blood for his country, who won a war where no Americans were killed, be able to respectfully point out that McCain has no real executive experience? If Clark can't do that, nobody can. And Barack Obama's spokesman Bill Burton said in a statement, quote, as he said many times before, Senator Obama honors and respects Senator McCain's service, and of course he rejects yesterday's statement by General Clark, end quote. Sharon writes, Barack Obama certainly didn't waste any time throwing Clark under the bus. Neither did a lot of other Democrats. By disavowing Clark so quickly, they made it appear that the Republicans' outrage was justified. Also, they've made it so that no one can examine any aspect of McCain's military record, like his PTSD, like how many planes he crashed, etc. And yet again, Democrats have surrendered to the Republicans on military issues. A few years ago, the raging Cajun James Carville said, quote, you'll never get the American people to believe that Democrats will defend them until Democrats stand up and defend each other. Anyway, Sharon writes, I now have no hope that Clark will be Obama's VP or have a key role in an Obama administration. Damn. I think we could really use his expertise on foreign policy and military issues. We live in such sorry times, Mike, that only the most courageous among us is willing to speak the obvious truth. And then that person gets his ass kicked for his trouble. The truth is worthless here on Planet Bush. Anyway, it's not the first time Wes Clark has gotten into trouble for telling the truth and being direct. It probably won't be the last. Sharon. From our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Yeah, I understand, Sharon, and if you know, you may or may not know if you're on vacation. I defended Clark's statement because bombing civilians from 30,000 feet and getting shot down is no more of a qualification to be president than it is a qualification to be dog catcher, a qualification to be the county mortician or undertaker or coroner, whatever the hell they call it now. And as far as people on the left or liberals or whatever slamming General Wesley's Clark statement, well, sure. Keep in mind that the liberal left or the progressive left or whatever you want to call it is not, you know, the like a home for angels. You know, there are people who claim to be on the left. Some of them are on the radio. Some of them have initials like Ed Schultz, who are no more of the left than they are of the whatever. I mean, the list just goes on and on. John McCain is a goddamn coward. He got a complete coward. He's a screw-up. Only in the military they don't use the term screw. They use the other term. He is a total screw-up. He's a jerk. He has no experience in anything. He's married to a woman who has a lot of beer. And that's about it. Thanks for the email, Sharon.
I'm so carefree with a joyless heart. Then sometimes again it seems all I have is worth. Then you finally see my other side.
I think actually the spending in the war might help with jobs because we're buying equipment and people are working. I think this economy is down because we built too many houses.
Oh, really? Or maybe it's because Wall Street got drunk. Suppose that might be it, huh? They're on a hangover now, aren't they, boy, huh? Jesus. Barack Obama on his walkabout through the Middle East, striding across the birthplace of three really screwy religions, has apparently wooed the Jewish vote back here in the United States with his vow of support for Israel. He said he backs Israel's decision not to negotiate with the Palestinian group Hamas. Is that a contradiction? Wasn't it Barack Obama during the primary campaign made a big deal about sitting down with our enemies or potential enemies or whatever and trying to... No? Huh? What, I dreamed that? Oh, okay. Well, that could be. Speaking in the Israeli town of Sderot, I don't know how to pronounce that, S-D-E-R-O-T, Sderot, which has been hit by rocket attacks from Gaza repeatedly, scores, dozens of rocket attacks Obama said the United States also supported Israel's right to defend itself, quote, against those who threaten its people, end quote. Does Barack Obama also support the right of the Palestinian people to defend themselves against those who threaten its people? Huh? Is turnabout fair play or is it not? Haven't heard anything about that. Have you? Anybody heard anything? Hello? Anybody heard anything about that? Can I see some hands? No? No hands? He also restated his position that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel. Will be. Okay, let's see. What does that involve? Ah, damn. That involves the forced removal of several tens of thousands of Palestinians who live in, is it East Jerusalem, who believe that it's their holy city too. Oh, Christ. Moses. Muhammad. Oh, my. Jerusalem, Barack Obama's words, will be, end quote, the capital of Israel. But he did qualify it just a little bit. He said that he believed that city, Jerusalem, to be a, his words, final status issue, end quote. A final status issue. God, I love this guy. A final status issue that must be decided by negotiation. And he said he remained committed to a two-state solution to the troubles in the Middle East, a two-state solution. Well, I'll tell you what, Brock, if let me just ask you something. If the United States consisted of everything east of the Ohio River and everything in Southern California and the rest of the country belonged to Spain, would those two chunks of the, you know, the were America, would that be a country, or what would that be? The so-called West Bank and the so-called Gaza, it kind of split up there, Brock. Come on, you're a professor of what, history? You know all this stuff, don't you? Huh? Come on, you're a smart man. A couple of weeks ago, Obama really caused some concern in the Arab world when he said that Jerusalem should be Israel's undivided capital. The international community, including up to this point the U.S., doesn't recognize Israel's claim that Jerusalem is its undivided capital. And part of the reason is because the Palestinians, you remember them, the Palestinians, kind of like the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto back in the 40s, the Palestinians, they say that Jerusalem is the capital, or at least East Jerusalem is capital of any future Palestinian state. Uh-oh, I see trouble here. What do you think? You think there's going to be a little conflict about this? Huh? Obama also said that he would, quote, take no options off the table, end quote, with regards to Iran. And he said that the country posed a, quote, grave threat, end quote, a grave threat. Iran poses a grave threat. He went on to say, quote, a nuclear Iran would be a game-changing situation, not just in the Middle East, but around the world, end quote. Obama said that. Around the world, Iran, a nuclear Iran. We have a nuclear Pakistan or Pakistan. We have a nuclear India. We have a nuclear China. We have a nuclear Great Britain. We have a nuclear Russia. We have a nuclear Israel. We have a nuclear France. We have a nuclear United States. We will soon have a nuclear Brazil. Possibly a nuclear Argentina. A nuclear. And those countries are not threats to, threats around the world, Senator? Only a nuclear-armed Iran. Why is that? We also have a nuclear... don't we have a nuclear North Korea? Yeah, I think we have a nuclear North Korea. But the nuclear Iran. Now, why just Iran? Persia, Senator. Persia. Ancient Persia. Right? And if they develop nuclear weapons, they exclusively, apparently, will become a global threat. Now, the bottom line, of course, and Senator Barak understands this clearly, I would assume one nuclear weapon anywhere on Earth is a grave threat to the entire world. Just one. So, what to do? What to do, what to do, what to do? I'm thinking. Wait a minute. Iran signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, didn't it? Yeah. Did Israel? No, Israel hasn't. Did we? Yeah, we signed it, but I think it was never ratified, or Bush or Cheney or somebody said, throw it away. Throw the goddamn thing away. Get it out of here. Get it out of here. We don't want to get it. Get it out of here. Oh, yeah. The senator from Illinois, before he said all this, held talks with Palestinian leaders in the West Bank city of Ramallah, and he said that if he was elected, he would adopt a policy of big sticks and big carrots regarding the Iranian government. Big sticks? Oh, damn. What could that mean? Like 10 megaton sticks, maybe? Bigger? Okay. And big carrots. What would the big carrots be? What the hell does Persia want that the United States could give it? What do we have? What do we have? What does Persia want that that Senator Obama, as President Obama, could give that ancient country? What? McDonald's franchises? What? What are the big carrots? I wonder. Barack Obama also said, quote, I would, at my time and choosing, be willing to meet with any leader if I thought it would promote the national security interests of the United States of America. Okay. The Illinois Senator's Middle East tour has been an attempt by the Democratic presidential candidate to bolster his foreign policy credentials ahead of the U.S.'s presidential election in November. Well, now, earlier today, while meeting with Shimon Peres, who, yeah, he's the Israeli president, which really is kind of a ceremonial post, Obama pledged that as president of the U.S., he would preserve the close ties between the U.S. and Israel, and that Israel's security would be a top priority in his administration. Palestinian security? Would that be in there anywhere? The security of the Palestinian people, Senator? Okay, not a top priority, but in the top 30 things? Obama said, quote, I'm here on this trip to reaffirm the special relationship between Israel and the United States and my abiding commitment to Israel's security, my hope that I can serve as an effective partner, whether as a U.S. senator or as president, end quote, at the Holocaust Memorial at Yad Vashem. He laid a wreath, lit a memorial flame, and deemed the place to ultimately be, quote, a place of hope, end quote. It doesn't say if he visited any of the sites of Palestinian butchery, butchery of Palestinians, and laid a wreath or lit a candle or declared those sites to be the place of, you know, hope. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring all that up. Because the woman there, she took his ring, took his babies, it took him minutes, took her nowhere. Heaven knows he'd have taken in a finger. All night. Sing once a young American. Young American, young American. She wants a young. We'll be right back.
Talk Radio, make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
So, as a result here, one assumes of Brock's definitive stand for truth, justice, in the Israeli way in the Middle East, an article in the Guardian of the UK says that Brock can pretty much count on the Jewish vote in the United States by a very large margin. Ira Forman, executive director of the National Jewish Democratic Council, which is an advocacy group with strong links to the Democratic Party, said, quote, "I think Obama will win the Jewish vote by a large margin. The question is how much," end quote. Rabbi David Saperstein, director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, said American Jews' traditional political affinity with African Americans, born of a shared experience of discrimination and the struggles of the civil rights era, could outstrip concerns among some Jewish voters that Obama is not pro-Israel enough. Are you people not paying any attention to his statements in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv or Ramallah or wherever he is? That Jerusalem will be the capital of, he didn't say Greater Israel yet, but I'm sure that's coming. He hasn't said the words Judea and Samaria yet, but that's probably coming. Depends on what? How the polling works back here? Senator? The senator has not expressed any overt or noisy concern about the removal of thousands, no, tens of thousands of people from their ancestral homes in order to make way. Oh, never mind. The Guardian of the UK says Obama's visit to Israel is partly to counter criticism from John McCain that he lacks foreign policy experience, but it also to shore up support among Jews in the U.S. Although they make up only 3% of the electorate. Although they make up only 3% of the electorate, Jews have been historically important, mainly as activists in the Democratic Party and as generous donors. A Gallup poll a couple of months ago put Obama, where it concerns the Jewish vote, 61% to 32% for McCain. Well, three percent? Whoa. Okay, what else? AM writes regarding Iran and Obama's sounding very much like McCain where it concern and Bush where it concerns the threat of Iran. AM writes, Mike, when's the last time Iran started a direct shooting war? The 1700s? Come on, Obama, stop twisting the night away. Oh, Barack, you are truly becoming my little dancing queen. Signed T. My little dancing queen? I'm sorry, that just went right over my head. Meanwhile, Holy Joe Lieberman, one of John McCain's most prominent supporters, has praised the guy who wants to murder all the Jews, the Reverend John Hagee, Pastor Hagee. Pastor what? Pastor Hagee. Pastor Hagee was, you know, they're having this big old thing called Christians United for Israel. Until the Messiah comes, then it's Christians United to kill all the Jews. But right now it's Christians United for Israel because that's the trick. That's the big piece of cheese you see in the mousetrap. And Jesus is floating around up there somewhere, according to Pastor Hagee, getting ready to come down and grab the cheese. And once he grabs the cheese and the trap springs and the Antichrist raptures into the bowels of something, I know I've got it all wrong, but somehow the snake talks and then the Jews all die because Pastor Hagee and his holy Christian warriors will take knives to their throats or something. But with all of that, Joe Lieberman said, quote, "The bond that I feel with the bond that I let me see if I can do him. The bond that I feel I can't do it anymore. The bond that I feel with Pastor Hagee, you know, I'm married to Hadassah. What do you want me to do? The bond I feel with Pastor Hagee and each and every one of you, Christians United for Israel, is much stronger than you know, letting it all go because John McCain doesn't like you. And I'm so proud to stand with you tonight. You know, I keep saying to Hadassah, I have to stand. Do you know how this bothers my prostate? I don't agree with everything that Pastor Hagee's done and said, especially the part about killing all the Jews. That kind of irritates me a little bit. You know, Hadassah says I ought to get away from him, but, you know, she's my wife. But there's so much more important than you know, what we agree on. Oh, what do you agree on? Well, I'm glad you asked. We agree on, I don't know. I have to look at my notes. Hagee said the spotlight that has been put on him since he called the Catholic Church the great whore, and the spotlight put on him when he said that God punished New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina because there's going to be a queer parade there the next day. And that, you know, the spotlight had been put on him when he has obliquely talked about, well, get a job! Poor people suck! Jesus didn't like poor people! Starve! Starve! And when the spotlight went on him because he has referred to the 144,000, that's the number of Jews allowed into heaven on that great getting up morning, what's going to happen to the rest of them? Well, we'll cut their goddamn throats. That's what'll happen to them. Ah! Hagee said the spotlight that's been on him for those statements has been unsettling. And he condemned what he said was misleading media coverage. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. I don't believe it. There, if you turn on MSNBC real quick, the rebroadcast, the Overton program, there's John McCain saying something. He's standing in front of the cheese counter, the cheese display of some grocery store. He's surrounded by cheese. Oh, my God. There he is. What is that? Oh, there's some Kraft cheese. There's some string cheese. What else is back there? He's talking about the Sunni awakening and the troop escalation are both the result of the surge or something. I don't know. This poor, miserable bastard. Somebody ought to really just take him and Pappy Bush and, I don't know, put them in a golf cart and set them out to sea or something. But this is amazing. MSNBC, there he is, standing in front of a cheese counter. Oh, this is too good. Excuse me. Welcome back to the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. I've never heard of worldpublicopinion.org, but apparently it is a global polling organization. You can go there and check it out yourself, worldpublicopinion.org. A new poll by that organization of 18 countries finds that in 14 of them, people mostly say their government should not take sides in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. just three countries favor taking the Palestinian side. Those three countries are Egypt, Iran, and Turkey. One country is divided. That would be India. No country in the poll favors taking Israel's side, including the United States, where 71% favor taking neither side. 71% of Americans, according to this poll, want us to stay the hell out of it. Quick, somebody send this poll to Barack. Quick. Asked to evaluate how well a number of key actors are doing their part to resolve the conflict, none of them get good grades, including Israel, the Palestinians, the United States, the Arab countries. They're all schmucks, according to this poll. On average, across all the countries polled, none of these so-called actors receive good grades from more than 3 in 10. And interestingly, Americans are divided as to whether the United States is doing its part. With the shoe lady? Do you know the shoe lady? You know the Condoleezza Rice now? Remember her? Anybody seen her lately? Huh? Anyway, Condoleezza Rice is seen by most of the governments in the Middle East, whether it is the Israelis or the Jordanians or the Palestinians or the Syrians. It doesn't make any difference. They see her as being just kind of like, you know, a waste of time. Go away, lady. Go buy some shoes. Look over here. We have shoes from all over the world. Come here. Come here to the Kasbah. Come to the bazaar. Look, look, look. Shoes. Shoes. Here. Here. Shoes. Nobody takes her seriously. Well, there's a reason for that. Back to the poll. It's at worldpublicopinion.org. The publics in most countries favor the UN offering to play a role in support of a resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Nearly all the publics in these countries polled would favor the UN doing that. If the parties could come to a peace agreement, the UN would send a peacekeeping force to enforce it. Most publics would also favor the UN offering to provide security guarantees to both Israel and the Arab countries should a peace agreement be reached. Oh, no. No, no, that's not going to happen. Sorry. But 71% of Americans think that the U.S. should just not... I don't agree with that, but 71% of Americans do. It doesn't matter what I think. But Barack is playing to the 3% who represent the Jewish vote in this country, according to what I just shared with you. And to that 3%, the other 71% can kiss his ass, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, according to Barack, Jerusalem will be, quote, the capital of Greater Israel, although he hasn't used that term yet. And, you know, the Palestinians can, you know, shut up and be quiet behind the wall. Just sit down. Shut up. Don't make noises. I'm running for president. Jesus, God.
But your middle name is Hussein.
No, 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 no. No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not Hussein. It's not Hussein. It's Ben Shekelman or something, you know, but it's not Hussein. Not today. I'm on walkabout here. Leave me alone. Whew. Okay, let me see now. 3, 2, 1. Okay, there's one. There's two. Dear Mike, well, you're doing it again. Your anti-Semitism is all over your program. Oh, God. Where were we? Oh, that's right. We were talking about Pastor Hagee and the fact that Holy Joe Lieberman has appeared at this, what do you call it, rally, convention? I don't know. Christians United for Israel. It's obviously some sort of fundraising thing for this rather rotund Pastor John Hagee, who calls the Catholic Church the great whore. Man, I don't even go that far. And he also says that God published New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina for staging a gay rights parade. Yada, 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 yada. Oh, and by the way, he's since apologized to Catholics, but he never said anything to America's queers. Not a word.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm sorry to the queers. I'm not. The Catholics,
Well, there's hope for them, but not the queers. Oh, God. Oh, Hagee, of course, is the pastor of the almost 20,000-member Cornerstone Church in San Antonio. That's not a church. 20,000 members is not a church. That's a village or something. I don't know. It's a shopping mall. The Great Whore. The Catholic Church is the Great Whore. So Lieberman has no problem with that. Are there any Catholics in Connecticut? I don't even know. Where Lieberman is a senator? Somebody ought to ask Lieberman. Do you agree with... Well, he says, I don't agree with everything that Pastor Hagee's done and said, but there is so much more important than that that we agree on. Ah, okay. And he said, I'm proud to stand with you tonight. Because if I'm not standing here, I have to go home. And Hadassah's there, and she made, oh, God, I don't know what she made tonight. What, pizza again? I don't know. Pastor Hagee, you know, I'll tell you what, in my heart of hearts, you know, you're a real schmuck. You know, you really are. You're a schmuck. Huh? Do you know what that word means? You're a schmuck. But, you know, you got this thing, Christians United for Israel. It's better than, a couple years ago when you all called us Christ killers. You know, oh, God, you people don't give up, you know, do you? Well, anyway, Pastor Hagee. Now, Christians United for Israel opposes giving land to the Palestinians. Get that? Giving land to the Palestinians. The Palestinians could make an argument that it was theirs to begin with. No. Never theirs, never theirs. God gave it to, to Lieberman's people. So it's not the Palestinians. Pastor Hagee says it's up to Israelis to reach their own peace terms. And he said his group was not, certainly not, were not. We're not trying to bring about a biblical apocalypse in the Middle East. We're not. We're not. Uh-uh. We don't believe. He said, quote, we don't believe we can speed up the end of days 1 second because we believe that God has shown that he will set the time, end quote. However, on the slight chance that maybe what I just said is not true, hallelujah, we will do everything we can to bring about the end of time and the great getting up morning where we all lose our clothing, even me, and rise up with a rapture. An organization supporting a negotiated peace in the Middle East, J Street, the CEO of which we're going to have on this program soon, said it had delivered a 40,000-signature petition to Lieberman's office urging him not to speak to Hagee's group. J Street is kind of a counterbalance to AIPAC. We'll be right back.
You're out of stock.
There's nobody home.
When I ask if I can count on you,
nobody home.
You take off your gloves and shoes.
My dream is that there be a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Iraq.
The lights are out, but I can't see them.
That's your dream. Okay, we, Houston, we have a problem. We have a problem here, Houston. Houston, we have a problem. Houston, Houston, we have a problem. Reuters news agency is reporting this. Now listen closely. Dateline is Guantanamo Bay, U.S. Naval Base, Cuba, today. Osama bin Laden's driver, he's the guy on trial right now, knew the target of the fourth hijacked jetliner in the September 11 attacks, the prosecutor said on Tuesday. in an attempt to draw a link between Salim Hamdan and the Al-Qaeda leadership in the first Guantanamo war crimes trial. Hamdan's lawyer said in opening statements that the Yemeni man, held for nearly 7 years before his trial, was just a paid employee of the fugitive Al-Qaeda leader, a driver in the motor pool who never joined the militant group or plotted attacks on America. But the prosecutor, Timothy Stone, a Navy officer, told the six-member jury of the U.S. military officers who would decide Hamdan's guilt or innocence that Hamdan had inside knowledge of the 2001 attacks on the United States because he overheard a conversation between bin Laden and his deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Stone, a Navy officer, said in his opening remarks, quote, "And if they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome," end quote. If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome. If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome. The dome. The dome on the White House office, the dome on the, you know, the congressional building. What the hell is that called? The Capitol building. Come on, Mike. Now, United Airlines Flight 93 is what he's referring to. And it, quote, crashed, end quote, in a field in rural Pennsylvania. That's the official 9/11 story. It is just as official as three buildings coming down as a result of a fire on the 112th floor of two of them or something. U.S. officials have never said that Flight 93 was shot down. Although all these crazy, psychopathic 9/11 conspiracy freaks, you know, the ones that won't buy the official story, have been pointing out for years that the so-called crash scene of Flight 93 was not really a crash scene at all. It was, in addition to being, to covering an enormous amount of territory on the ground, it was the scene of what happens when an airplane has a couple of missiles planted into its fuselage from an approaching fighter. Jesus H. Christ. So here you are. Navy officer and prosecutor Timothy Stone told the six-member U.S. military jury made up of military officers, quote, "If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome." Do you understand what's being said here? Do you understand what's being... seriously, do you understand what's being said here? Oh, Hamdan, by the way, a father of two with a fourth-grade education, is charged with conspiracy and providing material support for terrorism in the first U.S. war crimes trial since World War II. He could face life in prison if convicted. Let me go back to that. Prosecutor Timothy Stone, a United States naval officer, told the six-member jury of U.S. military officers who would decide Hamdan's guilt or innocence, quote, "If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome." Oops. That noise you hear, listen. That's the cat getting out of the bag. If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome. Who ordered the shoot down? Who decided to murder 43 Americans? Was it 43 Americans? Who decided that? "If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome," said Stone, a Navy officer and prosecutor in the first U.S. war crimes trial since World War II. Well, isn't that interesting?
and you cry the way you cry. I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack.
Oh, really? Is that how it happened there, Chucklebutt?
I'm just always still curious to figure out how he saw the first plane hit the tower.
He has
curiouser and curiouser.
He has second sight. That's not as complicated as it may sound. If they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome, a Navy officer, Timothy Stone, prosecutor, said in his opening remarks. Okay, I've sent this story out. It's all over. It's in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. It's at TV News Lies. It's at Raw Story. It's here. It's there. It's everywhere. I guess I missed it on the evening news tonight. But I'm already getting denials from people that I'm sending the story to. It's a Reuters news agency story, and reporting on what was said. But whatever. It's just very, very weird to me. I wonder if before this criminal nest of pissants leaves D.C., if they will own up to anything. Any of the acts they have committed. As far as shooting down a jetliner with 43 people on board. Was it 43? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be ignorant of that. As far as doing that, I don't know what the standard operating procedures are, but I was... Maybe I've seen too many movies, but I was under the impression that if you have an airliner in a questionable situation like that, you first show up with several jet fighters capable of shooting it down, and you clearly warn them. Maybe that happened. You clearly warn whoever is piloting the aircraft that... he or she is in imminent danger of being blown out of the sky. I believe there are certain universal signals that are used now that say simply, land the goddamn plane before we kill all of you. So, I don't know. But anyway, like I said, already the responses are that no, it didn't happen that way. No. The prosecutor isn't really saying that. No, it's something else. Now over there. Look over here. All right, let's go to your phone calls, starting with David, who is in Blaine, Washington, listening via the Internet. Hey, David.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
Good. Yeah, my phone line's acting kind of weird since I've been... on hold, enjoying the show. One of those, probably those NSA trolls are sitting on the phone line. I'm about to blow a blood vessel because I'm listening to the show and just thinking about what McCain has done the last 72 hours in the media, including Katie Couric and CBS editing.
Yeah, wasn't McCain. That something? I haven't even gotten to that story, but.
It makes you think of the Pentagon's lying, mm-hmm. making up, fabricating stories that are, and continually sanitizing the images and the information coming out of Iraq. Because so the insurgency is okay. So Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army is the direct threat to the occupiers. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, sure.
Like the number one threat. I mean, they hold all the And I hope the listeners are listening, because al-Sadr's party holds the majority of the seats in the Iraqi parliament.
Is that true? I didn't
know
that.
Yeah, he does.
Okay. I knew they held considerable seats, but I didn't know that they were
the majority
party. Okay.
Yeah, they're the majority. And so, you know, with all this notion that the Iraqi parliament is going to sign a security pact with the United States based on timetables,
mm-hmm.
There's no follow-up on that at all, period. And McCain and whether the surge worked or not or didn't work, you know, is irrelevant. I mean, he's using the Iraq, this illegal invasion, this crime against the Iraqi people as a political football, and then our troops that have come home for the last 5 years mangled and dismembered and amputated,
mm-hmm.
and poisoned by, you know, the depleted uranium, you know, and the like. I mean, do you see why I'm about to blow a blood vessel?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. For the same reason that anyone who is sane, anyone left sane in this country right now, that immediately eliminates all Republicans. But anyone left sane in this country would just about blow a blood vessel, because John McCain has been one of the key enablers for the Bush crime family,
yep.
like all the Republicans have. The Bush crime family is all about murder and mayhem and lies and deceit and dishonor
and
torture, all of it. They're scum. They're the worst kind of scum.
Despicable, traitorous.
I like those words. But McCain and Lieberman and the rest of these people are nothing more nor less than enablers. They're cheerleaders for death and destruction. And that's you know, you wind up with the government you deserve. And we have allowed this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We have allowed the Republican Party to become a sewer of psychopaths. We've allowed the Democratic Party to become enablers of the psychopaths, while most of us here in the United States have sat home on our rather large asses and decided, nah, I don't need to vote. Nah, they're all the same. I ain't going to vote. Screw that. I don't care. Give me a beer. You know, that's that. And you wind up with the government that you deserve. So we are the ones, the citizens of the United States. I know everybody who votes out there for every election like I do, even the primaries, are sitting there going, God damn it, Malloy, it's not my fault. Maybe not. I don't think it's my fault either. But we Americans, nobody came in and invaded us and put in positions of power fascists. That happened because we allowed it to happen over about a 35-year period, culminating with December 12th, 2000, when the Supreme Court said, if you count the votes in Florida, it's going to injure George Bush. So let's stop this nonsensical crap right now. It's over. And at that point, when 10, 20, 30 million Americans didn't pick up the nearest stick and head for the streets, the fascists knew they were home free.
And see, this is why I hate lifetime appointments, because Scalia, that evil troll, is still sitting on the Supreme Court like a bump on a log, and he and all those other Supreme Court judges, the blood is on their hands.
Well, yeah, but don't forget who put them there. Democrats. There is not.
Yep.
There is not a sitting Supreme Court justice. Out of all nine of them, I realize some of them have been there for a long time. There's not a single sitting Supreme Court justice whose nomination and eventual confirmation could not have been stopped by Democrats in the United States Senate over the past 30 years. Not one. Now, as far as Sammy the Fish Alito and John, whatever his nickname is, Roberts, the new Chief Justice,
mm-hmm.
those two appointments were I mean, greased by the Democrats in Congress. So, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Well, you know, the truth does hurt, and it really hurts.
I hear you. All right, listen.
Thanks, Mike. I look forward to meeting you on the 18th, hopefully.
Oh, you're going to on the 16th?
The 16th of August, yeah.
Oh, great. Well, just come up and say, hi, I'm David. And at that point, my security guards will probably mace you. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks, David.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care. Take care. Security guards. Jesus, God.
You're not bringing Molly, are you?
No, I have attack chihuahuas that Barb is calling from Arizona, listening on KPHX, of all places. Hey, Barb.
Hi. I mean, these people are the same people who run my homeowners association.
Oh, yeah?
This is the same tactics, the same greed, the same they don't care what the rules are.
Yeah.
And it's the same mentality. And you know, as far as Bush seeing it on TV, I think he was telling the truth. I think they had a remote camera. I think he was in on it from the beginning.
In on what? On
he
what?
Was sitting out in his limo before he went into that kindergarten and watched from a government-controlled remote camera that the first plane went in. Because he told the story like a weird lie a weird truth that kind of...
Now, wait a minute, Barb. You're not one of those 9/11 conspiracy freaks, are you?
No, my dad was a union president of Bridge Builder Structural Steel.
Yeah?
Yeah, and I watched those buildings come down and go up. And I know I watched it the very first moment and knew that that was a demolition.
Hey, hold on, Barb. Hold on. Stay right there. I got to do a break. Then we'll come back and chat some more. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. Stay with us, please.
Flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. To meet my maker and fly
into the sun. It's about 10 before the hour. All right, Barb, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you hold on another second?
Sure.
Okay, let me put you on hold for a second. Because I've got to grab a towel here and start wiping egg off my face. The first story about the shoot down of Flight 93 came from Reuters. McClatchy Newspapers is presenting the story differently. This is what McClatchy is saying, and this was in the Minneapolis Star Tribune last night. Here's what it says. The U.S. government opened its first war crimes prosecution Tuesday with a narrative of Osama bin Laden's driver overhearing his boss offer an eerie postmortem in the aftermath of the September 11th, 2001 attacks. Quote, if they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome, end quote, declared Navy Lieutenant Commander Timothy Stone. And then it goes on, and so with his first words to a military jury, the prosecutor conjured up a conversation from inside the world of Al-Qaeda, revealed by the accused driver Salim Hamdan. Bin Laden told his deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, that U.S. forces, not heroic passengers, brought down United Airlines Flight 93 in a Pennsylvania field on 9/11 before terrorist hijackers could slam it into the dome of the U.S. Capitol. Okay, well, I only do this about once a month, you know, open my mouth and insert both feet before I have a chance to really check out a story. So, never mind, as Emily Latella would say, never mind. No, I really do. I feel like a total jackass for getting an email and immediately putting on the air what I thought the email said, which it did not. So, my apologies. The conversation, yeah, it may have been shot down. Dick Cheney may have pushed a remote button somewhere and brought the plane down and You know, that's still on the table. I'm not taking that off the table at all. Because in looking at the debris at the so-called crash site, my inexperienced eye says, no, that's not a plane crash. That's something else. But the way I reported it a few moments ago is utterly and absolutely incorrect. And my apologies for doing that. Navy Lieutenant Commander Timothy Stone is quoting from a narrative supplied to the prosecution and the defense, put together by Osama bin Laden's driver, who says he overheard his boss, Osama bin Laden, making the statement. All right? Hey. I wonder what I'll get totally wrong the next time. Back to Barb! Barb, who's been very patiently... I'm sorry, Barb, I just had... You know, I had to take a moment and explain to people that, I took careful aim and shot myself in both kneecaps.
Well, I'm looking at the story on Raw Story as well.
Yeah.
And it's just something really weird that they're using that analogy, or that happens to be the story that this guy happened to overhear. We don't know what's going on.
Well, that's true. I mean, the whole thing is a rat's nest of lies and deception.
Right.
And God only knows what has happened to Mr. Hamdan in 7 years of being held in solitary confinement, or what sort of interrogation techniques were used, or
he
what
has
he...
He has a chip in his head, for all we know. He's going to say
sure.
whatever... They
sure.
put a button to say.
Sure. And the only thing that I am correcting is my overeager jumping on the statement from the prosecutor. I thought this was a prosecutor, a Navy officer, who was letting the cat, how did I put it, in my smarmy, self-satisfied way, meow, meow, the noise you hear is the cat coming out of the bag. Oh, do I feel like a jackass for saying that?
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, you can get that impression. You know, it's hard to figure out. I mean, if they hadn't shot down the fourth plane, it would have hit the dome stone,
right.
A Navy officer
right.
said in his opening remarks. I mean, that's what it says.
But
look any further. But at the same time, why are they putting that statement even in a court record?
Well, because it belongs in the court record, because what they're trying to do is link Hamdan to bin Laden. And what's the best way to link him to bin Laden except by saying, well, this is what Hamdan has said he heard bin Laden say.
Okay, so bin Laden was saying that...
Bin Laden is what the prosecutor is saying
right.
is that this was a statement from bin Laden
right.
that he said.
Right, that he said if they hadn't... But bin Laden has a more of an inside track on what happened that day than we do. I mean, if you really do look at some of these videos, there's not there wasn't a bone available at that site. I mean, if you look into the very early morning, my girlfriend lived in Pennsylvania, and the newspaper article said that there was nothing in that field. They
yeah.
couldn't find any. I mean, it was blown up.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't crash. We
well,
know what the
right.
plane
well,
crashes
well,
look
well,
like.
Every piece of photographic physical evidence that I've seen regarding the crash of 93, Flight 93, would indicate to me. And again, I'm certainly not a crash scene expert. You know, I turn away from stuff like that. I'm a nervous flyer to begin with, but. You know, everything I've seen would indicate that this was a plane that was shot out of the air.
Right.
And you know, if in fact it was on its way to crash into the U.S. Capitol building, then I guess it should have been shot out of the sky or something. My take, though, is that you don't shoot first and ask questions later unless you're Dick Cheney.
Right. Well, they also could have been heading for Three Mile Island. They were only...
Well, there you go.
15 air minutes away from it.
Yeah. All right, Barb. We never did get to the Homeowners Association part, but thanks for checking in. We'll talk again. I got to take a long break here. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. I'm still Mike Malloy. This is still Nova M Radio. Thanks for sticking around.
Did you get any facts wrong there during the break?
Producer does not have to make statements like that to highly embarrassed talk show host. Now, I am aware, though, as a couple of people emailed during the break, that Donald Rumsfeld, remember him? Whatever happened to him? Rumsfeld, on at least two occasions, referred to the shoot down of Flight 93. So, of course, Rumsfeld was an addled, psychopathic, podium-thumping maniac who, who's another one that would have fit in perfectly with the German high command back in the 30s. But he did make a couple references to the Flight 93 shootdown. But that's not what's at issue here. What's at issue is my misreporting of something, misreading it completely.
I used to wonder back in the good old days, the early pre-9/11, or even the early post-9/11 days at Bush cabinet meetings, I would have loved to have seen Donald Rumsfeld and John Ashcroft have a conversation. They both had such bizarre uses of American English and strange vocabularies, and the way John Ashcroft would talk. And then, of course, there was Rumsfeld with his, look, by golly, I've got a laser pointer. I mean, just between the two of them, wouldn't that have been interesting?
Yeah, it would have been interesting. What really would have been interesting is to watch Ashcroft trying to anoint Rumsfeld with oil. Before they
and then see if Rummy could weaponize it.
Yeah, there you go. Back to your phone calls. Eric is calling from Huntington Beach, California, listening on the internet. Eric, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey Mike, I sent you the transcripts from a proceeding. I talked to you a couple weeks ago before you went on vacation.
Oh yeah. I received everything. It's a massive amount of stuff. It's going to take me a while to work through it, but thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You did get the excerpts, though, where it's clear they're carrying on military tribunals of civilians here in the United States.
That what?
That they're carrying on military tribunals.
No, I opened the package that you sent to see what it was, and I have set it aside. I have a stack that is about 3 or 4 feet deep, and but I remember our conversation. This is Lieutenant Eric Schein of the,
yes, sir.
Of the Coast Guard.
No, not the Coast Guard. I'm actually a naval officer. The Coast Guard is the one that's prosecuting me, and they're saying
civilian. That's right.
Well, this goes into McCasey, and what he's trying to do is to change everything to a war footing to where they can excuse themselves for things that they have been up to the last 5 years or more, just like the Germans did in ex post facto legislation. It goes into Vaughn Walker, who's the guy who's taking care of the EF&F case with the warrantless wiretapping with AT&T up in San Francisco.
Right.
Walker, if you recognize that name, George Herbert Walker Bush. The Bush family married into the Walker family.
Right.
The head of the GAO was also a guy named Walker. Remember Michael Powell?
Yes. Colin Powell's son.
Exactly. And you start to peel back the thin veneer and everything that's going on, and all of these people are so interrelated and tied back to Europe that by 2012, if we're not in an all-out war with Europe, I would be surprised.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen, frankly.
I agree.
All I want to do is my little toy radio show and watch my kid grow up and, drink Jack Black occasionally and enjoy my wife and daughter. That's about all I want to do.
Well, and I'm right there with you, Mike, but the very important thing is that the Coast Guard has moved into Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
It was a civil service agency. Its employees were all civil servants. Although they had uniforms and boats and guns, they weren't a branch of military. They've moved into Homeland Security. And they're now declaring themselves to be a branch of military under the UCMJ, under military law, Title 10, operating in Homeland Security, not DOD.
Well, give us your website again, Eric.
It's www.martiallaw911.com.
Martial law what?
911.com.
Martiallaw911.com.
We're living in a military dictatorship right now.
Well, it certainly feels that way at times.
Well, and it all relates back to Austria, Bavaria, Germany, you know, FBI Director Mueller, the current Fed Chair, Bernanke, Austrian, Schwarzenegger, Austrian, will not renounce his Austrian citizenship. Start adding it all up. Even look, like you said, like Rumsfeld, and he's not the only one. Admiral Allen is married to Pamela Hess, of not only Hess Oil Dynasty from back east, she's also related to Rudolf Hess.
All right, Eric, I'm starting to get dizzy.
Yeah, no, and it's much worse than that. Even Congressman Christopher Cox, who was the congressman out here at Dana Point, California.
He's a real loser.
Oh, yeah, he was the first head of the SEC, and now he was again appointed by Bush. He was first appointed by Reagan, I think. It's either him or his father, but it's the same. It's Christopher Cox. I believe it's the same person and not, you know, relations.
Right.
But with these guys, you can't be certain because guys like Congressman Hunter, who was running for president, he tried to set up his son to take over his congressional seat. So you have to be real careful on
that. Of course, he's in prison now, right?
No, not Hunter.
Oh, Duncan. That's right, Duncan Hunter. He's not
Hunter
in prison.
Should be, but Cunningham is.
Right, Cunningham is the one who's
in prison. Hunter is just as tied into all this stuff as well. And that very same name, if you look into Reagan and Cheney, and a lot of these other names, they're the very same names that arose in medieval Europe that carried out the same stuff on all the nations in Europe. And they're trying to take us back to a system of feudalism, royal family rule.
Well,
but real quick on Congressman Christopher Cox.
Yeah.
He found a stash of helium. That's like a gold mine. It's from between World War I and World War II. We were the only producers of helium in the world. It's a naturally mined product. We were going to sell it to the Germans relating to the Zeppelins, the Hindenburg and the Graf Zeppelin and others.
Right.
Because they went into Poland and Czechoslovakia, we cut it off. This little gold mine of helium was basically buried over. Congressman Christopher Cox somehow finds it, works across the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, sells it off, almost like taking the gold out of Fort Knox and selling it off. It goes to Skunk Works and others. They're now working on airships, surveillance vehicles, that are lighter than aircraft, that have a special skin on them, to where, just like they used to in World War One, World War Two, they'd paint the underside of, like, an aircraft light blue so you couldn't pick it off with anti-aircraft. They have active matrix screens so that they can actually, when you look up and say you're looking at, in the night sky at the moon, if the airship goes over, it projects the image on the hull so that you may see kind of like on the horizon on a hot day where you see like the heat rising. It looks weird, but you still see the moon and you kind of pass it off like nothing. But it's actually one of these airships, and guess who's involved in it? Blackwater, Eric Prince.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised at that, Eric. All right, pal, I have to leave it there because we have to break. I will try my damnedest to get through the stuff that you sent me, and we'll talk. We'll talk. Oh, here it is. This is from CNN, December 27th, 2004. The Pentagon says Rumsfeld misspoke on Flight 93 crash. CNN reports, a comment Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld made during a Christmas Eve address to U.S. troops in Baghdad has sparked new conspiracy theories about the terrorist attacks of September 2001. In a speech, Rumsfeld made a passing reference to UA Flight 93. He said, Rumsfeld referred to, quote, the people who attacked the United States in New York shot down the plane over Pennsylvania, end quote. Oh, never mind. Jesus, God. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Up and down the street, you know that cat's been drinking. So got no shoes upon his feet. Man, he's high. I said that cat is high. Yes, he's high. Man, he's high. The better guy. Watch Paul and Schmidt. Luke's got a little more shot. You know I won't lie. Cat's high. The better guy. Boy, he's high.
Russia.
Government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, represented respectively Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
Ehud almost. He was going to be an Ehud, but didn't quite make it. Ehud almost. All right, back to your phone calls. Robin is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Robin.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's kind of chunking along, you know.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, as much as you've brought us over the years, I think we can give you a pass on that story.
Oh, okay, thank you.
But also, I'm probably going to be up there in Seattle.
Oh,
when,
great.
You go up there.
Oh, great.
And I'm a truck driver. That's why I'm in L.A. today.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you'd be interested in some home-smoked salmon.
Oh, thank God you said salmon. sure. You bet. Home-smoked? Wait a minute. What are you using to smoke it?
Alder.
Huh?
Alder.
Alder.
Hardwood.
Hardwood. Oh, hell, I love salmon as long as it didn't come from some damn fish farm.
No, sir. No, sir. I fish it right out of the Lewis River.
Well, that would be absolutely wonderful, Robin. I would love it.
Okay.
Home-smoked Big Paws salmon.
Yeah. you're looking for someone that kind of looks like Chuck Norris if he let himself go and got fat.
In other words, sort of like Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Oh, my God. Oh. No,
that's
not really.
That was Kathy's.
Let's just say blonde hair. Yes, I know.
That was
I
Kathy.
Know. Kathy, no. Please, you know.
That was Kathy. That
guy is just, oh.
That was Kathy's favorite program. Dog the Bounty.
Are you kidding?
No, Dog the Bounty Hunter. She used to lay in bed at night, and we would watch that, and she would just trip on it. She liked Dog's Wife. She thought Dog's Wife was just the epitome of femininity.
No, I grew up with people
like
that. No,
I'd say they were the epitome of what do you call it, crystal meth.
Yeah, right. Dog the Bounty Hunter. Oh, my God. All right, Robin.
All right, Mike. We will see you there.
I hope so. You'll be the one that smells like fish, right?
No, I won't smell like fish.
Oh, it's smoked.
And I'll probably be flirting with Randy, too.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's good. All right. Thanks, Robin.
She'll have all kinds of guys flying around her, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. All right, Robin.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll see you there.
All right. Take care. What? What was that last bit?
I don't even remember Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife's name, but I know
Peaches.
That all their children were named Youngblood, it seemed like. But I just, it was just sort of, I don't know, theater of the macabre or something. I did have a bizarro fascination with that program. Now, I watch Frontline and I watch C-SPAN,
In a pig's ass you watch Frontline.
Occasionally I had to have a dose of Bravo.
Yeah.
And you have to admit there was something creepily attractive about
no,
that.
No,
you didn't
no, no.
So? Don't well, you watch Cops?
Don't
for a
you
while,
remember? Like oh, I love Cops. Cops makes the Cops
or
is
that,
reality
that
TV.
MSNBC Catch a Pervert show.
Oh, I love that one too. That's reality TV.
Well,
but
so was this.
No, it wasn't. Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Well, see, the thing is, they were more criminal to me than the people they were. Certainly, a lot more colorful and entertaining. And I swear, half the girls in my high school class look just like that woman.
Cops is great American television.
Except with more tasteful makeup.
Yeah, I love watching Cops. I love to see these rancid, cigarette-smoking, cheesy, baseball hat-wearing, no shirt on, white people being
Bush supporters
yanked out of their apartments and you know, stand out there on the street saying, well, God damn it, she took a swing at me first without meat cleaver. I had to shoot her. What do you want me to do? Just stand here?
Well, see, after that, then Dog the Bounty Hunter and their nine sons
was refreshing.
Named Youngblood would all chase after the perp once he had escaped from justice.
We need to do a break here, please. All right? That's the only way we're going to get out of this conversation is to do a break.
No one out there has guilty pleasure TV shows. No. Come on. Nobody out there watches American Idol.
I used to like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
That was a good show. I loved it when they would walk into some freak's apartment, you know, some straight guy who'd be sitting there with his knees crossed or his legs crossed in a real defensive posture, like, don't touch me, don't even look at it. And they'd walk into his apartment and look around and just go, oh, my God, look what's in the bathroom. Oh, mold. Don't touch me. Don't look at me. We'll be back with your phone calls after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
There are ways to read. There are people here who do not even own a TV. Everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful. Oh, everybody be careful.
Everything I know about my country, I learned on TV. The man on the screen tells me who is our enemy. They say that we are free and we must fight to be number one. So when the army calls, I'll grab my TV, my car and my gun. And the TV God watches over me, opens up my eyes, shows me how to see. All around the world, every night and day, on my...
We share a vision of two states, Israel and Palestine, living side by side in peace and in security.
Is he saying in peace and insecurity or in peace and in security? I guess it really doesn't matter. He doesn't know what the hell he's saying. 25 before the hour, back to your phone calls. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
The guy can't talk, even with, you know, his eye teeth in place. What
I
can I tell you?
Well, he can't see what he's saying.
Yeah, well, that too. I had to call tonight because this morning on my Cub radio station, they talked about something where a barge got too close to a 600-foot tanker on the Mississippi River and left a mess of 400,000 gallons of fuel oil.
Right.
Now, when you hear that initially, you think the tanker linked it all over.
Yes, you do.
Well, guess what?
What?
It was the... I called the station to find out what it was about, and they didn't know. They didn't know who owned the tanker or whatever. So right. I waited to talk to my friend that works at the library. And yeah. She told me the tanker was a Liberian flag at Tintamarra. Okay?
Yeah.
A 600-foot tanker. The barge was a fuel barge run by a U.S. flag fuel barge run by American Commercial Lines out of Jefferson, Indiana. And it was their fuel.
Yeah.
See, the tanker just sort of cut the barge in half and made a mess all over the river.
Yeah. Well, what is disturbing about that story?
Well, those poor people in New Orleans, if they didn't have bad luck, they wouldn't have any luck at all.
Well, that's true, but as long as we're shipping huge clots of oil on the sea or the rivers or the lakes or whatever, if the only applicable law were the law of averages, a certain amount of this goop will wind up polluting everything, right?
The only place I heard it mentioned all day long was just now before you took the call on your news break.
Well, I saw it earlier today on CNN.
Did you?
Yeah, they had some video of this broken boat. But it you know, ever since what was the big
Exxon Valdez?
Yeah, ever since the Exxon Valdez, nothing really about these oil spills, you know, makes my sphincter muscle tighten, because nothing could have been worse than that. And yeah. And the outcome of that, all these years later, what's it been, 16, 17 years?
20 years it took the Supreme Court to decide that, well, they shouldn't really have to pay.
Yeah, they shouldn't have to pay.
The guy was drunk. Jeez.
Right. So all the people who were just absolutely brutalized by Exxon, the Exxon Corporation, have been told by the Supreme Court, go pound sand in your ears because nothing's going to happen. Now, that's not a surprise because that's corporate America and the federal judiciary doing what it does best, and that is working hand in glove to make sure that corporate
America... Covering the backside of corporate America.
Right, to make sure corporate America wins and the average Joe doesn't win. So, you know, 20 years ago, it's just astonishing. So when I hear about these oil spills now, Marge, I hate to say it, but they're just real yawners to me. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel very badly for the people who are going to be directly affected.
You know what else sort of made my ears go up when they said Jeffersonville, or is it, I'm not sure if it's Jefferson or Jeffersonville, Indiana. But do you remember a few years back you shared a book with the Truth Seekers about depleted uranium?
Yeah, I do.
There was a place in Indiana called Jefferson Proving Grounds, which is about 25 miles north of the Ohio River, north of a place called Madison, Indiana.
Yeah, what were they trying to prove there?
They were just going to stash the depleted uranium.
I see.
And I was trying to remember. I didn't know whether you could remember or not. I'm remembering 198. I don't know if it was just 198 tons. 198,000 tons. Do you remember?
I don't.
But I thought, well, son of a gun, you know, Indiana's getting, you go on that side and you got depleted uranium, you go on the west side, north of Terre Haute someplace, mm-hmm. right along the mm-hmm. Indiana-Illinois line, and mm-hmm. they're burning nerve gas.
Yeah, right. Well, they're doing that over here in Alabama, too, or they were doing it. I don't know what happened to all the burning. But, you know, I come from Ohio, which is the most polluted state in the United States. So why should Ohio be by itself? We're neighbors, or I shouldn't say we, because I don't live there anymore. I haven't lived there for 40 years. But Ohio is Indiana's neighbor, and therefore Indiana certainly has the right to become as polluted as Ohio.
And,
right?
And then you get on my end of the state,
yeah.
and you've got BP that is fighting to get their permits so they can further pollute the lake
right.
and the water and the air. And then, of course, the mills that have been here for the last 100 years that have been doing a good job of that. But, you know, they're not the cause of all the air pollution in our area. We got to go down every 2 years and test our cars so we don't put...
All right, Marge, thanks.
I'm going to be talking to myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, but you certainly perked up my night. So thanks for checking in, okay? Marge? Marge!
Oh, I'll call dog.
Marge! I think Kathy disconnected the call. All right, we'll catch up with Marge next time. Jesse is calling from Kentucky, listening on the Internet. Hey, Jesse. Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I just real quick, I want to say hi to Marge. I like listening to her.
Yeah.
And it's Jeffersonville, Indiana. I live right across the river from it, so it's Jeffersonville, Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Mike, I wanted to call about tonight. You had that caller, I think he was in the military, he sent you some stuff or something.
Yeah, Eric Schein.
Yeah, and it reminded me back in the 90s, Kathy Bush, in a State of the Union address, I believe it was, mentioned something about a New World Order.
Right.
And so, listening to this Eric guy, it really makes me wonder, Mike, is there any hope for this country that we can still save this country?
Well, I certainly hope there's hope. Oh, wait a minute. That sounds a little bit weirdly redundant. Yeah, I believe there's hope. I really do, or I would be gone out of this country and move someplace. You know, given today's technology, I could do this program from the island of Malta if I chose to. But I still think there's hope, and that's why I stay here. And I know a lot of people listen to this program say, well, you're so negative. Don't you have any hope? Of course I have hope.
Well, you know, listening to him, it really, if it connected the dots there, I mean, I see enough evidence to me to convince me that there is a fair amount of truth in what he was saying. And it just, you know, it really like, is there any hope? I mean, you know, to get out there and try to save this country from what's happened in the last 8 years from this Bush crime family.
Mm-hmm.
I hope there is. I mean, I want to believe there is, but after listening to him tonight, it's like, I don't know.
Well,
also, I wanted to ask, what was that website he gave? Something martiallaw911.org or something?
That's it.
Okay.
.com.
martiallaw911.org.
Say it again?
martiallaw911.org, that was it?
Either .org or .com.
All right. I'm going to look it up.
All right. Thanks for checking in. I do appreciate your comments, Jesse. Take care. Ulrich. Hello. Ulrich is calling from Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Ulrich.
Hey, Mark. How you doing, Emily?
I'm okay.
Oh, give God the glory, man. Listen, question.
Yeah, yeah.
I listen to you just about every night, man, and I appreciate
Thank you. Really
appreciate it when you go after the Bush crime family. Man, that makes my day. Every night I come on, I hear you. I mean, it makes my day. Trust me.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I got a question. I don't know if I'm supposed to mention these people's name on the air, but I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
If I can't, let me know.
Okay.
Okay. You got people like Lou Dobbs, okay, that spell them kind of what they call bias and venom.
Yeah.
Against Barack. I mean, why wouldn't they have guests on? And, you know, these people, you listen to the bias that is still on. Why doesn't the guest call them out? You know, I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, they let these guys, because they host the show, they let, the, you know, allow them to get away with murder, with the kind of crap that is still out. Why do they allow them to get away with it?
I don't know. Maybe they're just intimidated. I don't know.
It's just beyond me, man. It's like, you know, like they do not ever go back after these jokers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like it things that they say is so biased. You know, you can hear it in their voice. I guess he don't like Obama simply because of the immigration stand he takes. I mean, that guy is just actually hate immigrants. I don't get it.
Well, you got to understand, of course, that. That Lou Dobbs is an arrogant right wing Republican white man. So what else is he going to do?
I mean,
you know, why does the dog bark? Because it's a dog, right?
Oh, yeah, very true.
All right, Ulrich, I got to leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks, pal. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Couple open lines. Who wants to be the last caller tonight? Give us a call, 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy.
There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope.
Every time I turn on the TV,
there's hope.
Somebody's acting crazy.
There's hope.
You let it'll drive you crazy.
There's hope.
Taking back my power today.
There's hope.
Gas prices, they just keep on rising.
There's hope.
The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving. Keep living our truth and do.
Ten before the hour, here's a little update. John McCain was to head out to a Gulf oil rig today to prove once and for all that we need, you know, responsible, environmentally safe drilling to lower gas prices, although they won't lower anything for 10 years and then only a nickel. And then the Department of Energy sent out a notice concerning the major oil spill occurring on the Mississippi River, in which at first it was reported about 10,000 barrels of oil were lost. CNN now reports it's 400,000 gallons of this stuff, you know, because drilling is totally safe. So McCain canceled the trip. Oh, John McCain is snake bit. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay, our executive producer. And back to your phone calls as promised here. Jeff is calling. Jeff is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Jeff.
Mike Malloy, you are an American hero, and I'm a procrastinator, and I want to be your last caller.
You're what?
I'm a procrastinator, and I just want to be your last caller.
Oh, okay. Well, there you are.
You said the term queer on the radio, and I just wanted to salute you for it. I'm here. I'm queer. I'm not going shopping, and I love you. I love you and Kathy, and I just give thanks that you're on the radio every day and I get to listen to you.
Well, that's a very nice thing to say, Jeff. I appreciate that. We're on every night on KTLK unless there's a hockey game.
Yeah, and I hate hockey just because of that.
I never cared too much for hockey. We had a team in Toledo, Ohio when I was a kid growing up, and it just, I don't know, it just seemed weird. It just seemed so weird. As soon as two hockey players get together, the first thing they do, they don't say, hi, how's your mom and them? They start beating each other with sticks. And it's like, Jesus, God, this is a sport? Oh, well. Hey, get that cough looked at, will you?
Yeah. You don't help me at all with it. I've got news for you. You just keep me laughing, and I love it. And when you were up there, I sure missed you, and I sent emails, and I said, this guy's got a new baby. You got to straighten up and get him back on the air. So,
well, that's very kind of you. Jeff, thanks a lot, man. I hope
you're welcome. I love you.
All right. Love you, too. Hope you're going to be there every night. Appreciate it, Jeff. John is calling from Los Angeles, also listening on KTLK. Hey, John.
Yes, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah, listen, you're the only one talking about it. It's the ultimate truth. You know, that Michael Reagan thing where he was talking about shoving a grenade up a baby's butt.
Yeah, wasn't that nice?
A Muslim baby. But he ended that with the mantra of the Christian Zionist.
That is,
there won't be any peace in the Middle East until all the Muslims are dead.
Yeah, that's
twice.
Right. That's right, yeah.
And,
yeah. Isn't he a nice guy?
Yeah, but I mean, the main truth is that President Bush is probably a secret Christian Zionist, but he's much more subtle, whereas John McCain has just blundered right out and shown that he's a Christian Zionist with his John Hagee and Reverend Ralph Parsley in Ohio with soliciting their endorsements.
I think it's Rod Parsley.
Well, what a name, you know. but it comes out of the Pentecostal movement.
Yeah.
Before John Hagee, there was a guy named Hal Lindsey, who was also in Texas.
Right.
And he was kind of the mentor of John Hagee. He wrote a book called The Late Great Planet Earth.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
And he made millions of dollars off of it.
He did. That's
and,
right.
And he also was one who believed that that Israel should expand their legal boundaries out to greater Israel, which nobody talks about except you.
I'll tell you what, John, there's money in the God business. You know, I don't care what religion you are. There's lots of money in the God business, don't
because
you?
Because you're the only one talking about it. I'm praying for you because I'm a Christian, and I'm actually praying for you, Mike.
Oh, no. All right, John, listen, pray for somebody who might get some kind of benefit, all right?
But, I mean, it's the most important because the Iraqi war and the price of oil gone up, which Muslims control the price of oil, it dwarfs all the other problems.
Well, the Muslims really don't, but that's all right. The oil-producing and exporting countries are the ones, and the speculators at the commodities market in Chicago are pretty much the ones who control the price of oil. But that's all right. I get your point. John, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Eric is calling from California, also listening on KTLK. My God. Hello, Eric.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. You got 30 seconds.
All right. I think you're the bravest voice on radio, but I just would ask you to please keep the hopes of impeachment alive.
I try. I really do. I try. I pray to the fairies every night to drop their magic fairy dust all over the Capitol building so that...
I'll see if you can get Dennis on again. And
I'll do it. All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Eric. Take care. Whoops. We cut his tongue off there, didn't we? I'm sorry, Eric. I didn't mean to do that. What, we have a minute left, and I got rid of Eric? Oh, my God. All right. No more calls, no more calls, no more calls.
What TV show are you going to watch tonight?
I'm going to see if there's some real TV on. That makes Cops look like child's play. Also, maybe MSNBC will do some more of that lockup stuff.
They show, like, the same 8 tattooed convicts over and over again.
Yeah, but these are the mass murderers, the ones that said, yup, I killed my mother, oh, and then I ate her heart. Oh, you know, that's just, I don't know, there's some weird fascination, but... you know, Dog the Bounty Hunter is no slouch. There's no question. Didn't he go to jail? Wasn't he busted in Hawaii?
Yeah, there was something, and then the show was off, and I was sad.
Well, maybe you can watch Runway.
Project Runway.
Project Runway.
And, that's truly brilliant editing.
Can you start?
It really is.
Can you start the music?
I guess I better.
All right, thank you very much. Project Runway. Dog the Bounty Hunter. Cops. Whew.
They made sewing interesting. Come on, think about it. Think about the producers of this
sewing?
Show. Sewing, fashion design. They made it interesting.
Thanks
to watch.
A lot for participating tonight, Truth Seekers. I'll see that she gets back on her meds. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.